you very much. Now, my talk is, excuse me, on mortality differentials between geographic regions in Australia. And these are the results from a risk percentiles model, a mathematical model for coronary heart disease. And my co-authors, Dr. Heidemann and Dr. Anna Peters, Dr. Helen Walls, Dr. Diana Magliano and Professor John McNeil, all from the School of Public Health and Preventive Medicine. And in common with all previous presenters, I have no financial relationships to disclose. Now, the background to this is that mortality rates in Australia are higher in rural and remote areas compared to major cities. In fact, life expectancy at birth can be up to 7 years lower in very remote areas compared to major cities. This has been identified by the Australian Human Rights Commission as a significant human rights issue. The causes behind it are complex, a mix of structural and social and cultural issues, but it is known that risk factor profiles in remote areas are poorer than major cities. You have higher levels of tobacco use, more obesity, higher levels of alcohol use, and so on. Now, despite recent falls in coronary heart disease mortality, this remains the single largest cause of death in Australia, around 17% of all deaths in 2006. So I thought it would be interesting to look at what sort of effect those differences in coronary heart disease risk factors had on those differences in mortality. Now, we don't currently have population-level data to allow me to analyse this directly, which is why I'm using a mathematical modelling approach. What I'm doing is modelling the distribution of this coronary heart disease risk within and between geographic regions and looking at that impact on the overall risk of death. Now, this is the first step in a longer project, and ultimately the aim is to use this to model the potential effect of interventions on risk factors by remoteness. But what I'm doing today is essentially mapping out the terrain for that study. First of all, what do I mean by remoteness? Well, this is based on an index derived by the Australian Bureau of Statistics. This is our national statistics organisation. And it measures the distance to towns or service centres. So what we're talking about is remoteness from hospitals, remoteness from clinics, remoteness from shops, essentially distance to services. It's classified into five broad groups: major city, inner regional, outer regional, remote, and very remote. And the project is going to look at how this differs across all five. But for today, I'm focusing on major city and very remote because these give us the starkest contrasts. My input data, well, firstly, I'm looking at mid-year Australian national population counts and total Australian registered deaths, classified by age, sex and remoteness, and I've aggregated across a fairly wide range of years, 2001 to 2006, because by the time you classify these by age, sex and remoteness, you're getting into some fairly small cell sizes, particularly in the remote areas, which are of the most interest. Now, I want to look at risk of coronary heart disease. The way I'm doing this is by applying two well-known risk factor prediction equations from the literature. The first one is the risk factor prediction equation derived by Anderson et al. Based on his analyses of the Framingham data set. This incorporates age, sex, systolic blood pressure, smoking, cholesterol, diagnosis of diabetes, and ECG, left ventricular hypertrophy, and the outcome is a 10-year probability of death from coronary heart disease. So that's what I'm using as my basic coronary heart disease risk measure. However, I want to look at total mortality, so I also need a way of allocating risk for deaths other than coronary heart disease deaths. And in this case, I'm using an all-cause mortality risk prediction equation from the literature based on the famous Mr. Fit study, predicting 6-year probability of death from any cause, and including variables age, diastolic blood pressure, number of cigarettes smoked, and total cholesterol. Now, ideally, I'd like to be able to break my population and deaths up using these risk measures, but we don't have these risk measures for the total population. So I'm basing my model on a national population sample of over 11,000 Australians aged 25 and over, carried out in 1999 to 2000. This was the AusDiab survey. It was a study designed to look at prevalence of diabetes and its associated risk factors. And from my point of view, the critical thing was that it has measured values of my risk factors. It measured blood pressure, measured cholesterol, and so on. The survey covered people aged 25 years and over, but I've actually restricted my analysis to age 40 plus, and that's actually a slight divergence from the abstract in the program. When I first started doing the work, I was looking at 25 years and over, but the mortality burden from coronary heart disease risk factors in Australia below age 40 is negligible, so I thought better modelling would be to focus on age 40 and over. And a critical thing with the AusDIAB survey was that it includes a geographic location, so I can code my survey data to my geographic locations. So what did I do? Well, there really isn't time to give you a detailed account of the model. It's a fairly complex modelling approach, so all I can do this morning is to sketch what we did, but of course I'm very happy to discuss details later if you're interested, either in this session or later in the conference. The first step is to divide the population up into deciles of mortality risk. What I want to do, ideally, is to allocate my deaths to mortality risk. I want to say how many deaths occurred in the highest decile of CHD mortality risk and how many are next and so on. But I don't know anything about the deaths. They're simply deaths taken from our death registry. So what I did was I looked, I used my risk prediction equation, applied to that nationally representative population sample. I worked out the risk of death for each person in that sample, ordered it from lowest to highest, and then divided these up into deciles of risk. Now, the basic modelling assumption here is that the deaths I observe are likely to follow the same distribution as the risk I can estimate. So I use the relativities of risk between deciles to allocate my observed deaths. For example, if a particular decile had summed the risk for a particular decile and it was, say, twice another decile, then that first decile would get twice the deaths. So I distributed the coronary heart disease deaths according to the ratio of risk between deciles using that Anderson et al. Equation. And then I distributed non-coronary heart disease deaths. As we know, coronary heart disease risk factors actually impact on a number of conditions. So I had to, I couldn't have some accounting for non-coronary heart disease deaths. And I used the Mr. Fit equation for that by allocating total mortality and finding non-coronary heart disease deaths by subtraction. So at this point, I have deaths by decile of risk. I have population counts by decile of risk because, by definition, a decile will have 1/10 of the population. So I moved on to construct mortality rates. And then I used these rates to construct a life table for each decile of risk, which then allowed me to calculate survival curves and life expectancies from these life tables. So now I'm in a position to say, for any particular decile of coronary heart disease risk, what is the survival experience predicted for that population? Now, what I've put up here is the survival curves from my life table for the major cities and the very remote areas. The major cities are in red, the red lines, and the very remote areas are the blue lines. And I've further divided these by the highest decile of coronary heart disease risk, that's the plain line, and the lowest decile of coronary heart disease risk, that's the dotted line. And you'll notice that with the exception of men aged 80 and over, the survival experience of people in very remote areas at the lowest decile of coronary heart disease risk is poorer than people in major cities at the highest decile of coronary heart disease risk. Telling you two things. Firstly, that being in a very remote area is particularly bad for your health, but also that obviously something other than coronary heart disease risk factors is driving this, which I guess I'd expected because, as I said, there's a fairly complex relationship between the factors that are driving these differentials. However, when you look at within the regions what what happens to coronary heart disease risk, what I put up there is life expectancy at age 40 by major city and very remote areas for men and women. So that, for example, the men in a major city at the lowest decile coronary heart disease risk have on average a life expectancy at age 40 of 44.3 years compared to those at highest decile coronary heart disease risk, which is 38.1 years. Now, the thing I'd like you to focus on is this difference, low to high. How much worse is it for you being in the highest decile coronary heart disease risk compared to the lowest? And what I have there is the difference in life expectancy. So that for a major city, a man, if you move from lowest coronary heart disease risk to the highest, you lose on average 6.1 years of life if you're in a major city. However, in the very remote areas, that movement makes you lose 7.6 years of life. And you have similar results for women. A lower effect of moving from lowest to highest coronary heart disease risk in a major city than very remote areas. So essentially what this is saying is that the coronary heart disease risk factors have a higher impact in very remote areas. Now you could argue that everyone's going to die eventually, so perhaps total life expectancy isn't the best measure for this. So what I also did was I looked at what you can think of as a measure of premature death. I put up there the probability of death before age 75. Now that 75 is a fairly arbitrary cutoff. I could have cut it at age 70 or age 65, and in fact it makes very little difference to the outcome. What this table shows you is the probability for a person at age 40 dying before they reach age 75 by major city, very remote area, and by sex. So that a man in a major city in the lowest decile coronary heart disease risk has on average 20% risk of death before the age 75. This increases to a 33% risk of death in the highest decile coronary heart disease risk. Again, I'd like you to focus on these differences. For a man moving from lowest coronary heart disease risk to highest in a major city increases your risk of death before age 75 by 13 percentage points. In very remote areas, that same movement increases your risk of death before age 75 by 20 percentage points. So again, you have not only a higher overall risk of death in the very remote areas, but the impact of coronary heart disease risk factors is higher. So what do we conclude from this? Well, survival is poorer for those at lowest coronary heart disease risk in very remote areas compared to those at highest risk in major cities, suggesting that something other than the risk factors is driving this. However, the differences in adult all-cause mortality and premature mortality between low and high coronary heart disease risk are greater for those living in very remote areas compared to major cities. And I'll just briefly there acknowledge my data sources and sources of funding. Say thank you for your attendance and have time for questions. Yes. Mm-hmm. It's a very interesting question. The question was about social networks and possibly less chance for social networking in remote areas. Am I summarising that correctly? That's highly likely. One of the major drivers in the Australian context is Indigenous population. The Indigenous population is a very much higher proportion of people in remote areas than the proportion of people in the cities, and Indigenous people have much poorer health outcomes on almost any measure. It's actually something of a national disgrace in Australia. But on the other hand, Indigenous people in those remote areas have quite strong social networks. That's one of the things they do have going for them, that the Indigenous culture is very strong in those areas. So I suspect it's not operating there. But the difference, even if you take out Indigenous people, and the next step in modelling, which I haven't presented this morning, was to try to find data to allow me to do that. And as best I could take out the effect of Indigenous status, you still see those differentials for non-Indigenous people. And you're quite right, in remote areas you're likely to get very much less social networking. Other questions? Yes. It's a very good question. For those of you who didn't hear it, the question is what impact migration trends may have within Australia. And in fact, it's a very common thing for young people. You grow up in a remote area, there are no jobs, there are no prospects, so you move to the city. And in fact, you are likely to get, if you like, a healthy worker effect in moving out of remote areas. You also have, at the other end of life, an increasing trend of people retiring and moving away from major cities and pursuing sort of lifestyle objectives in remote areas. Unfortunately, the data to model that are really hard to get. So I suspect, although that's a really interesting issue to study, I don't think my modelling tools are the tools to study it. But it is something that really needs to be taken into account. Yes. Yes, that's also a very good question. The question was, have I been able to take into account different access to health services and different quality of health services available in major cities compared to remote areas? It is true that people in remote areas have much poorer access to health services, and in part that's going to be captured by the index of remoteness that I'm using, because the index of remoteness is based on distance to services. But you're also quite right in saying that the quality of services varies. Not that I wish to cast slurs on my professional colleagues in the remote areas, but it is true that it's exceedingly difficult to get access to specialist doctors in remote areas. They're simply not there. They like to live in the major cities where they can have the pleasant lifestyle. To take a simple example, one of the most remote jurisdictions in Australia is the Northern Territory. There's not one single urologist in the Northern Territory. The Northern Territory government has to date been unable to attract a urologist to the Northern Territory. Anyone with a urological complaint, if you can afford it, flies south, or you go to your GP and hope that they will be able to help. Now, again, these are really interesting questions, but the data at a population level is not something that I can incorporate into the model. So beyond the use of that index of remoteness, which is supposed to capture that distance to services, I think probably my modelling tools are not the tools to elucidate that. What I'm hoping with this sort of modelling work is that this is a way to generate interest in some of those more detailed studies. Indeed, there is. The question is there geographic variation within urban areas? That's not part of the scope of this particular study, but other studies I've been involved in say there definitely is. If you look, for example, at our biggest city, Sydney, there are areas of high socioeconomic status which tend to be related to better health outcomes, areas of low socioeconomic status which tend to relate to poorer outcomes. There's also an indigenous health issue in that as well within the major cities. For example, for those of you who know Sydney, the district of Redfern is a very high indigenous population area, has terrible health outcomes compared to some of the more leafy suburbs where the medical specialists live, where the health outcomes tend to be higher. As I said, that's a little out of the scope of my particular study, but is an active area of concern.
Okay, we'll have questions at the end.
Okay, thank you very much.